21-15-52, Filler against United States. Mr. Filler.
Good morning, Your Honors, and thank you for the time, if it may please the Court. So we have three entities to sort out here: the Washington Research Foundation, which is a private entity that provided a license to other entities, Neurographics, and then also Neurographics sole proprietorship, which is really myself, Aaron Filler. So in this ruling, collateral estoppel is applied to challenge standing, saying that in Neurographics 1 in 2012, in which Neurographics was the corporation was a plaintiff, was found not to have standing, and collateral estoppel is being applied to conduct that standing problem into the new case, Neurographics 2. And separately, we have a challenge to do with subject matter jurisdiction, so that, in a sense, the argument is that even if standing is fixed, the Assignment of Claims Act bars subject matter jurisdiction because the federal claims that arose against the United States in this patent litigation were according to the government held by WRF, and according to Neurographics, these claims are held by Neurographics. And there's sort of an issue of first impression when we have a patent license situation where the granting entity is alleged to hold the right to sue, and the practicing entity has the right to exclude. Which of these two, the one with the right to sue, the right to exclude, acquires the federal claim, which may not be assigned under the ACA? So since we argue that it's very clear from the license agreements that Neurographics was given an unfettered right to exclude, and therefore the federal claims at issue were held by Neurographics. The position of the government here, which the court has adopted, is that because WRF held the right to sue, that it held the federal claims, and they were never conducted to Neurographics by the license. And so when Neurographics arrives in court, it has no claims to assert, and there's no subject matter jurisdiction. So we get guidance both from general patent law and also from Court of Federal Claims, the 1498 takings cases, that when you have this situation of just a right to sue held by an entity, and this goes back to Crown Dye and Tool, which was a Supreme Court case from 1923, most recently revisited by John Wiley and Sons versus DRK, Second Circuit, 2018, that a party with an isolated right to sue has no standing. They have to be joined with the party with the right to exclude, because the actual harm suffered is by the party with the right to exclude. And if that's the case, if the party with the right to exclude holds the claim, then the question is, if that's Neurographics, how do we get Neurographics the right to sue? Now, these patent ownerships, which originally came from, were the inventors assigned to various universities, and the University of Washington ultimately held most of the rights through the life of the patent, and then December 27, 2013, just after the patent had expired. The patent expired October 1, 2013. The parties all did a round-robin assignment, delivering all rights to me personally, Aaron Filler, Neurographics sole proprietorship. And I am the original plaintiff in this case, so I arrive with all rights. And we did this transfer because of a co-pending complex MDL patent litigation in U.S. District Court in the District of Massachusetts. And by sweeping up all the rights into myself and having me join as a plaintiff in the MDL in U.S. District Court, it solved all challenges to standing, and that case went forward. When descended of that case, the Brain Lab component came before this court 2 years ago or so. But in the Court of Federal Claims, when we reopened, there's the argument made by the government is, well, Filler has arrived, and he has got standing now, but the claims are still stuck back there in WRF, in Washington Research Foundation.
This is Judge Reina. But didn't the court find that you held certain exclusionary rights and interests, but you didn't have all substantial rights? And for that reason, you needed to bring WRF into the litigation. Our case law is pretty clear on this. And I'm referring to the Armaro case versus Microsoft.
Well, at the time that...
Your problem seems to me to be that you need to have WRF with you in order to have standing.
Well, currently I have complete ownership. So at the time this case was filed, I have complete ownership. There's no... WRF has no ownership at all. I have a full ownership assignment. It came from the University of Washington.
We're talking about substantial rights to the patent.
Yes. Yeah, I own the patent completely.
Well, but I guess what you're trying to tell me is that WRF has no substantial rights to the patent.
That's right, anymore. They're, what's being asserted is that it's still holding the federal claims, and that it couldn't, that the assignment, that the federal claims are locked, were left behind at WRF because it couldn't assign them due to the ACA. And we're saying, well, actually, it never accrued any of them because it never had any right to exclude. The right to exclude was long since delivered to Neurographics, which joined into this case. So I come in as the owner with all rights, except those that I've licensed to Neurographics. And then Neurographics arrives, and we argue that because it had the right to exclude all the way back to at least December 29, 1998, all the way through, this was always Neurographics, that the federal infringement caused injury to the exclusive licensee, which is Neurographics. Although the court has held that Neurographics could not actually file the suit without joining WRF, which we had disputed, the fact is that I came into this case when it was filed in January of 2019 carrying all necessary standing on the date the case was filed, because I'm the complete owner of the patent, no residual rights in WRF. But we also say that the federal claims, which perhaps cannot be assigned...
What rights does WRF have in the patent at the time of filing?
At the time of filing, they had no rights because the patent was expired. They had no rights at all. They had, up till the time of expiration, they had a royalty right only. So with that, we don't see that collateral estoppel, which is often at the center of the rulings here, is really has much of an effect.
What about during the time period that this case actually is concerned with, January 2012 and October 2012? During that time period,
so,
what rights did WRF have in the patent?
So
it's
been found that they had a right to, they failed to transfer the right to sue. That is, that they said they gave all rights for individuals, corporations, businesses, partnerships, and other entities, And the court found that by saying corporations, it excluded the United States. We argue that that is against Maurice v. U.S., the old John Marshall case from the early 1800s, saying the United States is a corporation.
I'm asking about the time period that's at issue here. During that time period, WRF had maintained the right to sue the government.
Well, we also point out that...
I'm asking you a question, Counselor. At that point in time, am I correct that WRF has a right to sue the government?
We point out that after October 1, 2012, it did not, that that right resided with Neurographics SP, because the WRF to Neurographics license was an encumbrance on top of the original license. So we went from WRF to Neurographics SP December 798, from Neurographics SP to Neurographics December 2198, and then we added an encumbrance to WRF, which would last until such time as the last reversion right closed. The last reversion right closed 12 months before the patent expired, because they would have to give 12 months notice to activate a reversion. And they were fully paid off for all of their expenditures, so that Neurographics SP was the owner and with the right to sue starting in as of October 1, 2012 through the expiration 1 year later, October 1, 2013.
All right, let's hear from the government, and we'll save your rebuttal time, Mr. Filler.
Thank you.
Mr. Hoskin.
Thank you, Your Honor. Gary Hoskin on behalf of the United States. First thing I would like to do is clarify that the court's dismissal in this case was based on lack of subject matter jurisdiction in light of the Anti-Assignment Act, not on standing. So the standing issue is actually subsidiary, and it only comes into effect if the court's ruling on the Anti-Assignment Act is upheld.
So you're not relying on any aspect of, let's say, the statute of limitations?
Well, we are. Particularly Section 2501 limits the recovery period as well. What we have here is a period. The suit was filed, the present suit was filed in 2019. As a result, the patent expired on October 1st, 2013. So there is a period from January 31st, 2013 to October 1st, 2013, 8 months, that is the subject of this litigation. After that patent expired, Neurographics and WRF entered in an assignment agreement whereby the
Before we get to the anti-assignment, just to complete the thought that I was trying to raise, you're not then arguing that this claim arose earlier than 6 years before the filing. That is, you're not saying that if the Anti-Assignment Act does not come out on your side, you're not saying there's any other basis for rejecting entitlement for that 6 months or so of asserted infringement.
Well, Your Honor, I think you are correct in the sense that we have asserted that Section 2501 is an absolute limitation on the recovery period, and that bars any recovery prior to January 31st of 2013. So that creates the beginning of the 8 month period. The expiration of the patent is the end of the period. Now, during that period, we agree that if one of the Neurographics entities did have a claim and it wasn't barred by the Anti-Assignment Act, then there would be at least standing to for purposes of going forward under the present motion. Now, that's not to say that we might not have other defenses. We're talking.
All right.
About
so you're conceding that they would have standing for that to collect royalties for that 6-month period between 6 years before filing and the expiration of the patent?
Well, not exactly, Your Honor. My point here is that we have a number of defenses. What I have said is that the collateral estoppel issue, which is the secondary issue, only becomes a issue at all if plaintiff can get past the Assignment of Claims Act. Dr. Filler did not address the Assignment of Claims Act at all. So we're kind of already in the collateral estoppel and the standing issue. Now, there is a point at which if plaintiff is correct on all of this, that they could have standing. But the court below has already found that they are collaterally estopped from alleging that here. And that's where I think it gets confusing, is the primary issue here is really the Assignment of Claims Act, not the collateral estoppel. Once you have to get past the Assignment of Claims Act before the court even has to look at the estoppel issue and the standing issue.
Well, let's continue these few minutes that you have and assume that the Assignment of Claims Act is in some ways quite mysterious because we have patent claims filed against the United States all the time in the Court of Federal Claims and here without anyone raising the issue of the Assignment of Claims Act because of internal relationships among plaintiffs as ownership moves about. So let's talk about the other issues, if we may.
I will, Your Honor, but I think it's important that the court understand that the reason that there's an Anti-Assignment Act issue is because it was WRF, an unrelated entity, who assigned the claims on December 29th, 2013, 2 months after the patent expired, and it's that assignment that bars the plaintiff here. Now, going on then, as the court has asked, this is really an issue, as Judge Reyna addressed, that the court has addressed previously in Morrow, and I direct the court particularly to pages 42 to 43 of our red brief. What we have here is WRF during the life of the patent, held the right to exclude to enforce the patent against the United States. That was the result of Neurographics 1. The plaintiff had effectively most other rights, but the one that the plaintiff lacked during the entirety of the life of the patent was the right to enforce against the United States. And that was, as I said, the subject of the collateral estoppel issue, and it is certainly the Neurographics 1 decision in its whole.
So what is the government's position as to when this claim arose if it's not barred?
Well, the problem of when it arose, plaintiffs claim that they can go back as far as, like, I think 1998, but we contend that the farthest they can go back at all is January 31st of 2013, and that's because 2501 bars anything earlier than that. The problem here, Your Honor, again, is that there is a complete, the NeuroGraphics entities had a very easy way to correct the problem during the life of the patent. And after NeuroGraphics 1, all they had to do is join WRF, and they would have had jurisdiction. They joined WRF in the Siemens litigation. They joined WRF against UCLA and GE. When it came to suing the government, WRF never joined. It didn't join in NeuroGraphics 1. And shortly after NeuroGraphics 1, it transferred all remaining rights to the to NeuroGraphics through the assignment.
Well, if it transferred all remaining rights, why did they have to be joined?
Well, prior to the 2013 assignment, they had to be joined because WRF held
the rights. That wasn't my question. My question is, why did they have to be joined after they transferred all remaining rights?
After they transferred all rights, it is the government's contention that they can't be joined. But NeuroGraphics is barred by the Anti-Assignment Act from asserting the assignment against the United States. Did that answer the court's question?
No.
Oh.
No, if you're relying on the Anti-Assignment Act as to why they have to be joined, I really feel that that's an incomplete resolution. Either they're a party, a necessary party, or they're not. Whether or not the case is barred for some other reason, we still need to know whether they're a necessary party after they've parted with all rights, all ownership rights.
And the answer, Your Honor, is, and the government has held this throughout the litigation, is that prior to the December 29, 2013 assignment, WRF was a necessary party in any litigation against the government. After the assignment in 2013, then WRF was not only not necessary, it couldn't be a party at all. It had no interest. But by December 29th, 2013, the patent was already expired. So all we were talking about is a claim for past infringement.
Has anyone quantified the possible liability? I don't recall anything saying that this is or isn't being practiced on behalf of the government. It's under Bayh-Dole, right?
Well, no. Plaintiff can only sue the United States for its direct infringement. It's extremely difficult to try and quantify that, in part because, you know, we are now 8 years after the patent expired, 8 years after the end of the period, and the litigation was filed 6 years after, or almost 6 years after the patent expired. Now, and you're talking about a use of MRI equipment that can have multiple uses. So, and on top of all of that, many of the manufacturers have already entered license agreements with NeuroGraphics. So, no, I think the answer to your court's question is, no, we don't have a quantification. But remember also that it's only an 8-month period, so it's not going to be very extensive.
Okay. Any more questions for Mr. Hoskin?
Not from Judge Wallach.
Okay. Do I hear silence from Judge Reyna? I guess so. All right. Mr. Filler, you have your rebuttal time.
Yes, thanks. Thanks very much, Your Honor. Just the most immediate thing we're speaking of, it's very well quantified because it's in extensive use. The United States government has spent billions in inducing the use of it and practicing the patent because there are now 23,000 peer-reviewed publications that use this method, the brain DTI. It's been revolutionary medicine.
Now, but you're talking about very close to 6 years ago.
Yes, well, the use continues, but we also have details because I've included as an exhibit in the claim a detailed listing of every grant issued by the United States for the practice of DTI, both by government entities and non-governmental grantees under contract, and the exact amounts and the dates at which each grant was offered. So there's a very precise accounting, and it's large. That is why 8 months is quite significant. But leaving that, I hope that's aside, which I think is obviously a later issue, but I think quite strong, is that WRF did not have the right to enforce. What this is about is that the grant of the patent, and this is in the appendix, the grant is, Article 2 at 05780. And it grants the exclusive use to make you sell in the territory. So there's an unrestricted. However, further down in the agreement at 05785, and it's paragraph 7.2, it says that NeuroGraphics has the right to sue any infringer, but it uses the term third party. The definition of third party that's where the word corporation appears, and government does not clearly appear. The Bayh-Dole issue is there is no Bayh-Dole right. The United States, I applied for grants. They refused to fund it, not to, sort of compare to Galileo, but they were saying this is just a method. This is like a telescope. It's just a method. It's not astronomical science. And Healy said, this is a method to see tracks in the brain, but it's not science. So it didn't fund it. It was funded in the UK and by neurosurgeons in the UK. So we've not no U.S. funding. So there is no Bayh-Dole rights. The role of Bayh-Dole in this case is that the court pointed to the presence of a Bayh-Dole clause in the agreement to say there must have been government rights assigned. Otherwise, why would we state that they might be limited by Bayh-Dole. So, but in fact, there were no actual Bayh-Dole walk-in rights. So that the issue, again, is because the only thing alleged to be retained by WRF is the right to sue for infringement based on the word third party in Clause 7.2, that would not give them the federal claim if the right to exclude was entirely in the hands of NeuroGraphics. So we would have had to join them were they to want to sue because they had no right to exclude or to practice. So the only other point I wanted to pull in was a reference to why I said there was a one-year period when the WRF right to sue was gone as well, and that's, I think there's a wrong page quote in the pleading, but it's 05787 paragraph 9C. This is the one full calendar year from the date of notification, and so basically they have an encumbrance, they could cause a reversion, but after that date they had no reversion, And so we argue that the encumbrance has ended and the rights are back in the hands of Neurographics SP, which has an intervening license, the primary license ahead of WRF, the license to Neurographics.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Mr. Filler?
Not from Judge Wallach.
No.
Oh, all right. Thank you. Thanks to both, I was going to say both counsel and to Inventor Filler. The case is taken under submission.
Thanks very much.